Wow, thank you everyone for coming to join us this morning. You know, biogas is, well, it's a fascinating topic. I'm Jessica Niekraz. I'm a partner and vice president at Clean Fuel Partners. We own the Wanakee Digester. Hey, Jeff. The Dane County Digester outside of Wanakee. Our facility services three farms, 2,500 cows, about 90,000 gallons of manure a day. And we export upwards of 80,000 pounds of phosphorus outside the Yahara watershed annually. So that's why I get to be the moderator today. This is great. Joining me is an amazing group of guys. To my left here is Brad Plyma, and he's a senior engineer at Eco Engineers. He has over 15 years of consulting and design experience working in the water, wastewater, industrial, and renewable energy fields. He's worked with municipalities, industries, dairies, and project developers on AD systems. Also, biogas upgrading to the renewable natural gas, which is the exciting conversation in the industry these days. Let's talk RINs and LCFS. So we'll get a little highlight on that. Brad has a civil engineering degree from Iowa State and is a licensed professional in multiple states in our fine country. So thank you, Brad, for coming and joining us today. Next to Brad is Jordan Crave, and Jordan is the agronomy manager at Crave Brothers Farm, located in Waterloo. He is a partner in the Crave Brothers Farm and the Crave Brothers Farmstead cheese, which, you know, who doesn't like cheese? And in Clean Fuel Crave LLC, which is the digester operation that is part of their farm. He's a graduate of UW-Madison Farm and Industry Short Course Program and worked for a custom harvesting and manure application company for about 4 years after college before rejoining the family farm. He works on all aspects of the farm, but primarily managing the agronomy department and coordinating and implementing their nutrient management plan. The Crave Brothers Farm milks 1,900 cows at two different sites and raises all their own replacements. So thank you, Jordan, for joining us today. And finally, Nadeem Afghan is the president and CEO of BioFirm Energy Systems and has extensive experience in development of renewable energy products projects in his 15 years of management experience. He's achieved great success in corporate strategy and business-to-business sales management for multiple high-tech companies, and he received his Bachelor of Science degree and Master of Electrical Engineering from San Diego State University. During Nadeem's tenure, BioFirm has commissioned numerous biogas facilities, including the first commercial-scale AD technology system in the United States. They are also working with the Dane County Landfill project that is creating a gas injection point system and will convert the landfill gas into vehicle fuel, eliminating thousands of tons of carbon emissions. So thank you, Nadeem, for joining us today. So just a quick summary on what we wanted to talk about this morning is the Wisconsin biogas business model was built on subsidized agreements that have started to expire. So suddenly the business plan that was paying for the efforts needs some regeneration. We have an opportunity to redefine that model now and seek opportunities for additional facilities and understand how biogas facilities benefit farms and their neighbors. We're going to talk about what we need to, embracing Renew's theme, scale up to ensure success and expansion of the industry in our state. And I will say there will be time for questions at the end, but if something is really burning, you know, just raise your hand, we'll let you know. All right, first of all, I will leave it up to you guys who wants to take the first question, but maybe we can just go down the line. What opportunities do you see on the horizon to support existing digester facilities in Wisconsin?
Do you want me to answer?
Yeah, sure.
So again, thank you very much. This is a full house. I can speak in the microphone, but I think I'm loud anyways. My employees say I I'm very loud. They close my office door every time I'm on the phone. So we have a very unique opportunity. Normally, I'm like Mr. No. I go to conferences and say, no, don't build a digester. You don't have the right economics. You don't have the right business model. You haven't studied what you're trying to do. You're just chasing a subsidy. And when that subsidy goes away, you're going to be in deep trouble because digesters are not like solar or something. They have extensive operational expense associated with them. So all subsidies address CapEx, capital expenditure. Subsidies never address an ongoing burden that somebody would have when they have a machine that is up and running. In a year, you have 8,770 hours, and you are running a digester. It's up running, producing electric or gas, 8,300 hours. So if you have a machine that runs 8,300 hours, requires maintenance and attention. But going back to what makes existing digesters very important in Wisconsin at this time is that we have had a series of government subsidies or legislative movement that has allowed a very important market develop for renewable natural gas. Those of us who have been in the digester business have always said that if you use an electric engine for a digester, you throw away 60% of its efficiency of biogas because engine is only 38%, 37% efficient. We've always said that biogas should either be directly used or should be converted into natural gas and sent into a distribution line for further use of those molecules. What's happened with through the incentives that are available, which EcoEngineer is absolutely expert in explaining, so I wouldn't get to that part. But those incentives have created a market for our ailing digesters. The Wisconsin was a leader in building digesters. I was part of a 100-year-old German company that opened an office in Madison saying, Wisconsin is the place to build digesters. And then through different changes and all that, Wisconsin stopped building digesters because the electric market was not very sustainable. But right now, because of what's going on in Green Bay, what Executive Parisi and Dane County has done in Dane County, there are natural gas, renewable natural gas opportunities exist by virtue of these counties having natural gas taps. For small producers of biogas, people that have small digesters, normally they would not have access to building, playing into the renewable natural gas space because the cost of interconnecting your gas to a large utility, like big gas utility, is prohibitive. It's no different than its cost of connecting with, you know, electric grid for a small producer because we make a small containerized unit that processes biogas, but it's not popular because it costs too much to connect. You know, not because of the machine cost. But now with the Green Bay opening a connection, which is owned by Detroit Edison, I don't know how much they're going to make it available to public, but that's something that, you know, would. But Dane County has a connection available, about 2,500 SCFM for digesters to bring their gas to the county and then hire EcoEngineer and sell your gas to California or get them to market and do other things. So there is a great opportunity right now, if you already have your digester, to start thinking about how to monetize gas.
Excellent. Brad, do you have anything to add into that?
No, I think that was a really good summary there. I do want to echo the comment about chasing subsidies, because usually we get involved and we go to a lot of conferences and speak, and we've really noticed that the biogas tract has grown and grown and grown, and people are getting into this space that really have no idea about operations, and they have no idea about the credit markets and the volatility of these credits. They're just chasing dollars. And I guess you're always going to have that, but I think existing digesters that are already in place have a huge advantage over brand new facilities. One, they know how to operate them because they've been doing it already. So they have the staff in place. And hopefully, you know, a lot of the economics have been offset. So you're not already having to pay off a brand new facility, and you're trying to do that in 2 to 3 years or 5 years with these high credit values. You're not really beholden to having that. And so you have the luxuries of being ahead of a lot of other facilities and just from a pure operations perspective. And, you know, and just to touch on the credit markets here. And so we do, Eco Engineers does a lot of work. Our whole company is really around the energy credit markets, and we track those, we help producers get those, we validate those with EPA and with and into California. And it's a really volatile market, and it's changing. So I think the number one theme that we preach when we go is whatever we're saying today will probably be different tomorrow, because that's how new this industry is with the credit market. So with the Renewable Fuel Standard and the California program, I mean, the California program started in 2010, and the Renewable Fuel Standard really started going in 2009, with biogas being classified as an advanced fuel in 2014. So we're still very, very new in this marketplace, and it's developing on a very, very rapid basis. So when we were working with Clean Fuel Partners and we do a report a year ago, not that the framework is any different, but the credit values are completely different. What the market can offer is very, very different. And so that's probably the biggest thing, is there's volatility in these markets, and there's a lot of regulatory uncertainty in some of these programs. And so expecting to go in and build a digester or take your digester and you're gonna, you know, get a consistent monthly payment or annual payment over a 10-year period is just not gonna happen. There's going to be cash flow volatility. It's almost like the stock market. You can't really predict what that's going to do on a day-to-day, month-to-month basis. But hopefully, what our job is to try to analyze what those markets are doing and help people understand where this industry is going forward.
Thank you. As well put by both gentlemen. Kind of specifically to the question of how we see being able to support existing digesters. I think there's a lot of digesters in the state that were built around the model of producing electricity and capturing heat, and a lot of them have lost their power purchase agreements now and have simply shut their engines off and are flaring gas and kind of trying to figure out what to do. So I think keeping it a simple solution is that these farms need a way to generate revenue off the products that they're able to produce, whether that's biogas, electricity, bedding, heat, something like that. So the farmers I know that have digesters have them for a reason. I think they'd like having them on their farm. They know there's benefits to them in terms of interacting with their community and other folks and helping the image of the dairy industry in Wisconsin. And if they can generate revenue with those systems, they'll keep running them. And I'm no different. So I don't necessarily have the solution, whether it's a balance. It's probably definitely going to be a balance. We can't just rely on credits or one thing or another, but if it's a combination of revenue streams, maybe it's bedding, maybe electricity, heat, things like that, that can keep some of these people viable. I think that'd be the place to start.
So you have offset costs by having the digester, right? Because of the electricity that you produce and the heat usage on the farm.
Right.
And so, the bedding cost. I mean, as I'm assuming that what makes it work then is the revenue that you receive from the PPA. Right. So you have some number of years left, but have you started to look forward to what's next?
Yeah, we have. I'm not exactly sure, somewhere in the realm of 3 or 4 years left on our PPA. So we did rebuild our engine recently. We had over 60,000 hours. He talked about running something more or less around the clock, and sooner or later it needs maintenance. So we had 64,000 hours on our first 630 kW genset. So we kind of decided what to do. We had that engine rebuilt, given that we had a decent length of term left on our power purchase agreement. Decided to commit to purchasing power, providing power and producing power again. But beyond that, we did also, in conjunction with the process of rebuilding and putting our engine back in, we installed a drying system. So we're taking our manure that we're digesting and we're screw pressing that and separating that into two products, the liquid fertilizer component and then the dry bedding. I shouldn't say dry, but the raw fiber, what we'll call it, or the wet fiber. And decided as dairy farmers that we tried using that fiber at roughly 30% dry matter as bedding, and it was too wet, and it wasn't a really healthy, good bedding source for our cows. So we decided to, we were buying some dried fiber, actually, from Clean Fuel. They were drying it down, and we did that for a couple years and said, this really works well. Our cows like it. It fits a great fit into our farm. So we decided to exercise that option, and we put in a dryer to dry our own fiber. So we kind of cut Jessica out of that, but we're not buying her fiber anymore, and John's. But we're making our own, which is working well for us. So we're using a combination of either propane and biogas to dry that, depending on what we have left after we run our generator. So we're looking at, that was kind of part of the puzzle, looking long term. Once this power agreement runs out, what are we going to be able to do with biogas? And we looked at it a little bit, but really that was a big component, was putting that dryer in. And in my mind, knowing that, okay, and down the road, if electricity isn't viable anymore, we can't get a new power purchase agreement, we can flip the valve and just pump biogas through our dryer and produce bedding, which is a product that we need, a high-quality source of bedding for our cattle to offset costs of purchasing bedding, and also it offsets some incoming nutrient balance for us. So we're not bringing in other organic materials that are adding to our nutrient balance. So we're kind of keeping that in-house. So.
Wow, that it's clearly like a whole cycle. It's really neat to see that in action. All right, with the markets, the LCFS and the RFS, how do you think that those opportunities impact new facility development?
Maybe I'll start, and you can go on that. But I think with the credit values, specifically the California LCFS credits that are available, if you have a manure-based digester possibility, so a dairy farm where you're processing primarily manure, the credit values are at all-time highs. And looking into the future, the state of California recently readopted the program. So it went from 2010 to 2020. They've actually extended that program to 2030 and doubled down on the greenhouse gas reduction from 10% to 20%. And so when we look into the future in those markets, if you look back about a year or 18 months ago, the credit value trended somewhere between $50 and maybe $100 per credit. That now, over the last year or so, has been upwards of $185, $190 a credit. So credit values have doubled. And all of the analysis that we've seen and what the supply and demand curves look like for the California program is there's not going to be enough credits in the marketplace to satisfy the demand. And again, maybe something changes with that, but at least with what we know now, we think those credit prices are going to stay high in the immediate future for hopefully several years and years and years. And what that does is specifically in a manure-based digester is it opens up a lot of revenue for them, and there's more certainty with the program. So you combine the California credits that are available that are very lucrative, and then you also have the federal, RFS RIN credits that are available. And now all of a sudden you have some automatic risk diversification there, where if California credits go down a little bit, you still have another source. If RIN credits are at lower values right now, but California is at high. So it's a really good risk mitigator for new projects. And so there is a lot of revenue available. And I think a lot of project developers, a lot of equity funds, a lot of banks are now realizing the opportunities here. And we're kind of past that educational and first wave of projects, looking at second wave, and now people are really understanding these are viable, they're economic, they make sense. There's a lot of other ancillary benefits outside of just revenue generation. And so you kind of add all those pieces together, and the opportunities to develop new projects are pretty big, especially in an ag or farm setting.
That's great. Nadeem, do you have comments?
Yeah, so in terms of, I second that, but in terms of looking at a broader vision of biogas in state of Wisconsin, I think we have some very, because of these credit markets, that is definitely very low-hanging fruit. At the end of the day, we want to promote manure management, and farmers want to promote that, but there aren't enough pathways for it to be a profitable or at least break-even part of their business if they were to invest in, we've looked at so many performers over the year, and they fail at some level. And so whenever you have a venture that has a fatal flaw in it, you're always wondering, do you want to sell equipment? Because you know this person's going to get in trouble in 3 years or 5 years. But right now, if you look at biogas as a whole, these credits have created a frenzy in if you have biogas available and you can get it into a gas grid, you will be okay because you could pay yourself very quickly a very big payday. However, the midpoint of that, as you climb the tree, you have to then start considering that if I've paid my system, I'm okay now, what's my long goal? I want to keep managing manure. I want to keep my farm innovative. There is a lot of innovative farms around the country. Grain drying, bedding, these farmers are so innovative and they get turned on to resource management. We never give grants to a farmer if he wants to dry manure or grain. You know, we give digester grant for electric, like there's an electric grant. Like if you look at focus grants, they are tied to electric production. Or maybe now there is a grant for, California is giving grants to farmers to build a digester, but not for really use on the farm, but they want more renewable natural gas. So I think short term, if there is an ailing digester that's flaring gas, if they are in an area where there's a gas connection available, that is the key. Or, because after that, it gets a little bit more difficult to get your gas to a grid. Midterm, the farmers need to really look at, can they monetize the value of biogas through these incentive programs that exist and get into the digester business? But always keep in mind that once those incentives goes away, you're never going to get $60, $90, $80 from California for your gas. But if you've paid your investment, you have an investment plan, this is a commodity. You're getting into like horse trading. There is another digester that's going to compete with you in California on timing. So you're basically supply and demand type. Pricing is done by market. And then the long term, that as I see the senator and I see all the policymakers on the table, Wisconsin is doing a lot on solar now because the sun shines. Manure is just like solar for us. It happens. It's going to be around. We don't look at manure as we spend millions of dollars at phosphorus trading at wastewater treatment, but we don't look at our digesters as ways to participate in that economy. Because if there is watershed and there is manure concerns in that watershed, we never look at farms and incentivize them with the wastewater treatment mechanisms, more centralized or local and centralized solutions. So that's sort of the big vision, is that do we use artificial pricing in California to build digesters? Because then farmers are promised a $60 payday, and when that goes away, they feel like, what happened? Or we do this step by step. If you have the gas, try to monetize it. If you don't have the gas, get it in as fast as you can because California is hot. But don't wait 5 years to get it in, because then if you do your pro forma today and get the gas in 5 years from now, because through, you know, investment, three farms, families, six brothers, they don't agree to something, and then 4 years later you have your digester, and then you blame eco engineers saying, hey, you told me you're going to get me $60. So they were not going to get you $60. Maybe you're going to get $6. So, but the long term, as a policy, I think we are a biogas state. We have biogas all around us. We need to decide what are we going to do for more incentives for drying, grain drying, for processors, higher value product. Crave Brothers make a very popular cheese because my wife buys it. But how do we incentivize those producers that are taking milk and making more products from them into giving them the right incentives to do bedding? So it's a cost. Phosphorus mitigation is one. The other thing is, if you're going down the gas market chasing California, we're one of the states that has a huge CNG potential, because now we're chasing this gas market. So we're going to have all kinds of natural gas coming out of our farms. Yet we cannot, this state under the administrations through the times, and I'm not going to get into politics of it, we cannot buy a CNG vehicle in Wisconsin because it's not certified. So here's a CNG state. I would go for forward calling Wisconsin a CNG state. Compressed natural gas is here. We can make it, especially if you're chasing a project in California. You're going to get your gas in a grid. You have compressed natural gas. You're a fueling station. You just don't know it. So, I mean.
Yeah, I just wanted to build on that kind of overall ecosystem, and Jordan touched on this maybe at the farm level about betting and what's next, and it's the same thing here. This is a very easy discussion to have when credit values are high, and let's just say that stays that way for 3, 4, 5 years. We always recommend people get that investment paid off, because then that's the ultimate risk mitigation. If now you don't have a $10, $15, $20 million debt service payment or equity payment to make, then that makes your break-even requirements for a project much, much, much less, much lower. So if these markets, don't stay hot forever, which they won't, that's just the nature of it, then you have other options out there. And kind of the next, it's almost like that same, if you're looking at a digester 10 years ago and you're like, I have this 10-year PPA, that's great. Well, now you're coming up on year 10 and you got to figure out what to do. This may not be any different on renewable natural gas into the pipeline as vehicle fuel. It's an incentive program that's here to develop the industry. It's doing that, but it's not meant to be there for the long haul. And so what we see again is there's a lot of risk mitigation tools that you can do. But kind of like I said, getting into that for the money and thinking this is going to continue won't happen. But kind of the basic, if you think there's a price on renewable carbon, which right now the trend is there, we see a lot of Fortune 100 companies, universities, Google, Facebook, Microsoft will buy this renewable natural gas. They're not going to pay what's available right now in the incentive vehicle fuel market, but they will give you a 10, 15, 20 year contract to buy that. It just won't be at the dollars that you can see, that you can realize in as vehicle fuel. But kind of the big picture is, if you believe that renewable natural gas is a commodity that people are going to want in the future, there will be marketplaces, because right now it's RFS in California, but Oregon now has a low carbon fuel standard. Washington will pass a low carbon fuel standard maybe this year. New York is looking at a similar program. Minnesota has talked about one. One of the owners of Eco Engineers is on the board of a Midwestern low carbon fuel standard committee, talking about what would a Midwestern LCFS look like. And so the trends are certainly there to have these markets go beyond, 3, 5, 10 years. We just don't know exactly what they look like. But as long as you're willing to kind of put the faith that there will be markets there, there will be a home for this gas beyond, this short-term credit spike in California and federal program.
And I would add just one quick one. A lot of the time we're leaving the smaller producers out of this discussion, because the smaller farms or organics cannot really even fathom how to get into this business. But this is sort of the Achilles heel of our policy, is that if you have a 9,000 cow dairy, which we have a digester on, they can sell gas, they sold their digester for a lucrative price, all of that. But if you only have, 2,000 cows, 800 cows, 600 cows, clusters are harder. I mean, all of that. So by looking at the CNG economy and looking at all of these other benefits of digesters besides just selling it into California, it is an important policy challenge that we have, is that how do we try to bring them on board too, because they're also producing manure and they're being left out of the incentive programs many times.
I'm going to put my player coach cap on here and say, we could, at our facility right now, process 50% more manure than we currently process. I have nothing to do with the back end that comes out. So we're going to have extra liquid, we're going to have extra fiber, and those need to find a home. So part of the challenge that we'll face in developing projects is, how do we create a valuable product of what comes out the other side? And that's going to take research. It could be something like a renewable fertilizer standard. We need to incorporate our phosphorus that we have, homegrown phosphorus, Wisconsin phosphorus, go team, and incorporate that into commercial product. I'm spitballing on this, so, mm-hmm. Stick with me, but, right now, there's no lack of manure to be had. It is just really a conversation about how do we create value from more streams than just gas and electric and animal bedding, if you're lucky. Those are my comments on that.
So that's another very important point, that we can build world's largest digester in Wisconsin. We can keep building $100 million project, $200 million project, ask state to grant $30 million, $40 million. The problem with decentralized manure processing, the farther you haul manure, the more problems you create, and the energy densities, hauling, nuisance, all of that. We have to look at different countries, different ways, where it's the end product processing that one of the most expensive ventures, because when you build a very large digester project, you have a very large back-end product problem. And Wisconsin growing season is not large enough to start absorbing this huge amount of, whether you call it fiber or, and our spreading season is also very short because, you know, ground freezes. So communities, whenever we look at a community digester idea, we always say, why not look at making a community, just like we have a wastewater treatment plant, why not we make a byproduct, the digester residual treatment plant, where they're making some very high value product, because those plants, you know, fertilizer plants are quite expensive, but then farms can build their own digesters and manage that part, and they use whatever they want to use for bedding and liquid on the farms, but whatever they don't want to use, they have an option to bring it to this treatment plant where they can get it treated. So these are big pie-in-the-high-sky ideas, because they can change over time. But if we want more digesters, like Jessica said, the economic incentive of selling power or energy to California or CNG is one thing, but the ecosystem requires that after digester has extracted the energy from the manure, you still have nutrient value that must be captured and monetized, that make the participants like farmers proud because they get something for it. Yeah. Right now we just say, well, that's a nuisance on your pro forma because you have to use it, you know.
Wow.
They covered that one.
It looks like we have time for one more question. I don't know if you guys, based on our conversation, have something that it has come to mind, or if, you know, I can pull from.
I guess something I just wanted to address or put out there is that, you know, kind of question number three that we had talked about was kind of one of our biggest challenge, and it's really dollars. It costs huge dollars to build a digester, to maintain it, to staff it. And engines are incredibly expensive if we're going to produce electricity. Everything we do on our digester, it just almost shocks us every time when we have to build something or replace something. So it's just a big capital intensive process. Mm-hmm. It isn't something that's insurmountable in terms of the process itself, pumping manure, heating it, separating it. Those are things we've kind of learned over the years now. We can do that pretty efficiently and are pretty comfortable with it. But it's just the cost of doing it and the infrastructure involved. So that, to me, that's our biggest hurdle is we're willing to make that investment, but like most people, we'd like to get a payback eventually. So there are other kind of not monetary benefits, but things that we appreciate and utilize our digester for on our farm. A big one I wanted to highlight is odor reduction. That's a big deal for us. I think on our farm, we see a nice reduction in the odor presence on our farm itself, and as well as when we're land applying our fertilizer, our liquid, it's a lot better. And I like it, my neighbors like it. So that's a benefit that nobody's paying me for, but we're kind of appreciating that. And so we have the bedding that we're offsetting costs, things like that. But and there's other things we kind of use it. We're in this unique situation that we have a cheese company, and we market and sell Farmstead Fresh cheese, and we use that renewable energy component as a marketing tool for us. So we advertise our cheese as being produced with renewable energy, which it is. So that's a little unique that we're able to utilize that. But the biggest hurdle is cost and operating.
Yeah.
Plain and simple for me.
I just want one quick to build on that. Whenever we hear somebody say, these things run themselves, we run the other way because... And John Heckel with Clean Fuel Partners, it does a good example of this, is when you have a brand new facility for the first year, you might think, wow, this is easy. And then things age and pumps break and things freeze. And manure is a very, very, very corrosive material. And again, it will eat through stainless steel. I mean, it knows it has no favorites on materials. So the first little bit will be easy, and then that's when the operators really earn their money, is when things start breaking, because then one day, I mean, some of these facilities, you're talking $10,000 a day in revenue from the natural gas. Imagine being down for a week. I mean, that's 70 grand that that is now lost because you don't have the facility operational. And so there's a massive pressure to keep these things operational, but having an understanding of the requirements to do that are very important. So working with somebody that's operated these things is very important.
So can I just add real quick to the cost of operating the digesters? Because that's a very, it is a chicken and an egg, because in Germany there are 7,000 digesters. Every block has a van running around with tools, and you have like, it's like if today we talk about cost of plumbing, none of the people in this room will say plumbing is extremely expensive, so let's not put toilets in our houses, because the cost of plumbing is where the supply and demand on digesters have not kept up. We are at the front end of when we sell something, we have to run it for a client for 5 years or 4 years, and we have to give him operating expenses of that. We just don't have liquidity in the market. So when Crave Brothers want maintenance done on their digester, the person who's gonna do that maintenance, it's one-off. He's gotta feed his whole family and run the expertise for a very long time from that one order. So they see that pain, and the cost has to be passed to the customer. So I think as we increase liquidity, we will build great jobs and great economic benefit by having more technicians and higher paying people that can do this work, just like the plumbing example I gave. Right now, we're in a very bad spot because the state only has 4 or 5 good digesters running with lots of complexity. We ran one of them, Clean Fuels running another one. And those people seem to have their good maintenance workers, but then the rest of the world is kind of just either the farmer performs the maintenance or he calls the pump company who hasn't sold a digester pump in last 2 years in Wisconsin. They're selling wastewater treatment pumps at millions of dollars of revenue, and they have to send a guy from Ohio or someplace. They'll charge you a trip charge of $6,000. Yeah. Otherwise, you're down for 3 days or 4 days.
Okay. All right. I think at this point we can open it up to questions. How exciting. Curious minds want to know.
So I'm an elected official in Iowa, and we love Wisconsin cheese. But we have 23 million hogs on the way to 30 million hogs and only 3 million people. And they call it liquid gold, but a lot of it gets into the water, and we have the worst water quality. I want to know if these digesters, and not all manure is created alike, are there digesters that could be used with hog crap?
Good. I'm also a Des Moines. I'm based in Des Moines. So actually, we're working with the state of Iowa now, Economic Development Authority, looking at the same exact problem, replacing dairy manure with hog manure. And definitely, it still works. It's the same concept. Hog manure, there's less of it. It's different characteristics, but the same concept can still apply really on any different manure. And we're actually looking at combining it with cover crops or energy crops in buffer zones to protect waterways as well. So co-digesting other materials along with the manure in order to generate even more gas, but to solve a lot of problems. And so kind of it's the same thing, that closed ecosystem. If you can keep everything closed and have a home for all the inputs and outputs, they can work anywhere.
My answer to that would be in terms of how is a digester able to help with water quality concerns or able to handle hog manure. I'm sure you can digest hog manure. But something I want to kind of make clear is that I don't think that a manure digester cures any nutrient management or water quality concerns. What we're doing is with a digester is producing an energy source, biogas. We are, in our farm, we're using that to kill some of the pathogens in the manure. But then the things we do after the fact are what help us with nutrient management. So we're separating out the fiber portion, which is a higher concentration of phosphorus. We're keeping that on the farm for bedding, so that's not going to the fields. And then the product we are taking to the fields is a more readily available source of fertilizer for our crop. But we're taking it much farther in terms of things that we're doing upland in the field, cover cropping, reduced tillage, low disturbance manure injection. We're doing a ton of things like that on our farm that I'm very passionate about to improve water quality, to improve our soil health, the tilth of our soil. Things like that are more important. A digester isn't a bullet for water quality. Not at all.
It's a tool.
It's a tool.
It really is. It's just a piece of equipment. Yeah.
Okay.
The other point is hog manure is like any other manure. It's low energy, so you know your payback is not as high as manure is all pre-digested, so some of the energy has already been consumed by the animal. So hog manure is a lot of large. If you want to look at reference plants, Grassline is building with Smithfield in northern Missouri, huge hog manure facilities processing it to RNG. And if you come by the table we have, I can give you some context where you can see the in action processing hog manure. Also, there's a huge incentive by Duke Energy to buy gas produced by hog energy, hog manure, so which also can give farmer an additional stable long-term contract.
Okay, I'm going to talk from a slightly different perspective. I'm on the Madison Sustainability Committee, and we are now reviewing our plans to go 100% renewable in Madison. But we also are looking at all the other sustainability issues in the city. For instance, lake quality and wastes of all kinds. And we're talking about leaves. We're talking about removing a lot of the weeds out of the lake. We're talking about the agricultural wastes around here. We're talking about recycling our food wastes in Madison. All these things we'd love to be able to combine with our energy question. We're very tired in Madison of heating our homes and our water with fracked fossil fuel gas. And we would love to see a way to take our local wastes and make local biogas and feed ourselves that way, because we can't just replace all of these gas-based systems with electricity all of a sudden. It's not going to happen. We have the infrastructure of the natural gas system. So what I'm trying to understand is, what are the barriers in both the technological barriers for taking all these different wastes, and do you think it's going to be possible at some time to deal with this in a holistic way so that we can generate our own gas, and maybe who could be the actors in that? I would love to see Madison Gas and Electric be a community utility and make something like this happen, because they've got the money to make it happen. So thoughts about that?
Two quick points on that. Yeah, I mean, I think what we see in California, there's a landfill diversions organics ban now that is in place that will phase in. And so really anything that will break down can essentially go to a digester within reason, obviously. But any organics, so food waste, your yard clippings, leaves, all of that can be digested. Just picking the right technology and figuring out how to do that. So it's there to do. Something that's interesting that other utilities are in. So CenterPoint Energy is one of the leaders in, and it's a regulated utility. And so what they've done is they've created a green tariff for their customers. It's an optional deal. So what they say is, they put it out to their customers, who here in our service area is willing to pay for green, renewable natural gas? And it's a significant increase from your frack gas. But what they are doing then is they're collecting all of that, those payments. They're going to the marketplace and saying, I have money and I have this demand for renewable natural gas. I'm willing to buy it from anywhere else in our territory or outside of that. But that's the same concept of swapping into California now is doing more of a green tariff. So that's definitely one way to look at that and make it more of a voluntary program and not something that's mandated by a city or a government, that I think is kind of at the forefront of where we're at.
You know what? I think we've hit time, everyone. So thank you so much for coming and attending. We're going to stay up here in case you guys want to, you know, have a conversation or additional questions. But thank you very much and enjoy the rest of the conference.